In our confirmation class on last week, on Monday evening and Thursday morning, we've been talking a little bit about church history. Whew! Aren't you excited? And it's not, you know, it's not a really pretty story. The story of this thing we call the Christian church. So for about the first 1,000 years, the church, the Christian church around the world, was essentially one entity. There were lots of differences of opinion, there were geographical divisions, there were cultural differences, but essentially, structurally, the Christian church was one thing. In the year 1054, that one thing split into two along ethnic and geographical lines. In the east, the Orthodox Church separated off from the Roman Church in the west. So now you had two things. Again, neither of them completely uniform or completely monochrome, but essentially, structurally, two separate churches for the first 1500, for the next 500 years. And then, you all know, after 500 years of two churches, all hell broke loose. And we had what is kind of oddly called the Reformation. I say oddly because it didn't actually reform anything, right? What it did was it caused phenomenal separation, splitting, fragmentation in one part of one of the two parts of the church. So the Western part had the Reformation, the Orthodox Eastern part didn't. The Western part had the Reformation, and after the Reformation, phew, incredible fragmentation. Until today, we have, and I ask this, so if you're at the confirmation class, you're not allowed to answer because you know the answer. I don't even really know the answer. I don't think anybody really knows the answer. How many denominations in the Christian church in the world today? I promise not to laugh at you. I laughed at Joan. I've been feeling bad all week, Joan. She made a guess and I laughed at her and I've been feeling so bad all week. But I think she forgave me. How many denominations worldwide? 1,200? Good guess. 30,000. Boy, there's a pessimist. 60? Oh, sorry. I did it again. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, according to Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, and they're good at counting things, those guys, in their International Bulletin of Missionary Research, Volume 39, Number 1, in mid-2015, around the world, of the 2.4 billion Christians, 1.2 billion were Roman Catholic, 543 million, so a teeny fraction, were Protestant. And of those 543 million Protestants, they say they are divided into 45,000 denominations. That's not individual churches. That's actual denominations. And I thought, wow, that seems like a lot. And so I kind of looked at Victoria, and I just went through my head and picked out churches that I know about. And I looked, and I tried to figure out how many denominations I could come up with just in Victoria. And remember, this isn't individual churches. This is separate denominations in our little teensy-weensy town of Victoria. And I found 30, just in Victoria, 30 different, and those are just the ones that I could come up with. I'm sure there's probably double that number, actually, in Victoria. It depends a bit on what you count as, you know, one little breakaway splinter. Is that a denomination, or is it just an individual church? I don't know. What do you call it? But the reality is that after the Reformation, the Protestant, little tiny Protestant wing of the whole worldwide Christian church fragmented and split into an incredible diversity of separate little bodies, mostly calling themselves the church and believing they were separated because they had the truth and the other guy didn't. And so they were right and everybody else was wrong. So if there was ever a prayer In the history of prayer, I'm not sure there is a history of prayer, but if there was, if there ever was a prayer in all the history of prayer that failed dismally, it would be Jesus' prayer that Larry read for us a moment ago from John chapter 17, when Jesus prayed, "I ask not only on behalf of these, that is, those who had been his followers and who were with him at the time, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word." That's us, right? That's all those Reformation Christians. "Who will believe in me through their word." And what's his prayer? "That they may all be 45,000 different denominations." Oh, no, that's not what it says. "That they may all be one. I in them and you in me, that they may become completely one." And you go, wow, did he ever blow it? He needs to work on his prayer life. Because that prayer sure doesn't seem to have been answered very effectively. What's wrong? And yet, in spite of what we have today, 30 years before those words of Jesus were recorded in John's Gospel, a guy named Paul wrote a letter to a church in Corinth. And in that prayer, Paul said, "Just as the body," that is the body of Christian believers, "just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of one body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in the one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and we were all made to drink of one Spirit. Now you are the body of Christ and individually members of it." And a decade later, in Ephesians chapter 4, the writer says, "There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in all." Now, lest you think that that means that there was no division or disagreement or disharmony in the church before the Reformation came along, or even before Paul wrote those words, you might go back and read the New Testament, the book of Acts, or any of the letters in the New Testament. The early church was riven. Is that a good word? Riven, divided, rent asunder, all the time, with division, with disharmony, with disagreement, with fights, right from the very beginning. There has never been a time when, structurally, you could have looked at the Christian faith and said, "Look, they all get along so well together, they love each other, they never disagree about anything, it's all so harmonious and beautiful and sweet and nice." It's never been. That's an illusion. That's a romantic kind of "ooh la la" sort of idea. It's never been true. But 45,000 denominations? So what do we do with that? Was Jesus' prayer a complete disaster? Was it an utter failure? Well, I think that what we need to see is that, in fact, in spite of the divisions on the surface, in spite of the discord that occurs from time to time in the life of the church, in spite of disharmony and division and separation, the reality of Jesus' prayer has, in fact, been fulfilled. We are one. We are united. Whatever denomination, whatever expression of Christian faith, whatever expression of faith, the reality is that we are beings, as Shannon said earlier to the children, we are beings created in the image and the likeness of God. And so I would suggest that the unity of our human creation, in fact, extends beyond the divisions of church, beyond the divisions of culture, that in fact, all over the world, all human beings are united in the oneness that is our true identity as beings created in the image and likeness of God. And the reason we have church is simply to try to be some kind of physical manifestation or embodiment of that unity which is true of all humankind. We don't do a very good job, but it's a noble adventure. It's a noble effort to try to be a place where we can say genuinely, yeah, we disagree. Yeah, we don't look at everything exactly the same. But we are one. We are one in our created nature. We are one in Christ. We are one with all humankind. There is no division. There is no separation. There is no great divide that keeps us apart from one another. The challenge is to see the truth of Jesus' prayer fulfilled in our lives and in the lives of one another. The problem is not division and separation. The problem is our ability to see. Jesus, in this great prayer, says to God, the glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, that they may be with me where I am to see my glory. The reason we see division instead of unity is that we fail to see the glory in one another. We fail to see that that which Jesus was, we are. It's important that we don't just look at Jesus and say, well, that's the glory of God. It's important that we look at Beth and say, that's the glory of God, right there. That's the beauty of God. That's the truth and the wonder of God. Because then we begin to see it out there. But you know, we won't do it out there until we do it in here. If you can't see the glory of God in yourself, I'm sorry, but you won't even see it in Beth. You have to start by seeing it in you. I think this is why the evangelicals say that you have to invite Jesus into your heart. I don't think it's an entirely helpful construction because it suggests that Jesus is something out there. So I'd rather say, not so much you have to invite Jesus into your heart, but you have to see Jesus into your heart and say yes to that. Say yes to that glory. Say yes to that beauty that is you. Say yes to that wonder and mystery and goodness and light and strength and peace that are your true nature, that are the presence of Jesus living in. It's why we have this communion service all the time. It has the same challenge as that little evangelical saying, inviting Jesus into your heart, because it looks like you're taking something from outside and bringing it inside. That's not what we're doing. When you take that bread, and maybe that bit of wine or not, when you take that inside yourself, what you're doing is you are acknowledging, you are choosing to affirm, you are choosing to see that that bread and that wine, that which they embody, the presence and light and the goodness and the truth and the beauty of Jesus, those things live in you. They are who you are. They are our true nature. And even more amazing, they're the true nature of the person beside you. On both sides. And in front and behind. Even when they're being creepy and nasty and irritating. Not any of you would ever be, but it does happen. You are the glory, the beauty, the light, the truth, and the wisdom of God. That's the problem. That's the problem in this strange but stirring story of the slave girl in the book of Acts. These guys, they own this little girl. And Paul comes along and sets her free. And then the writer says, when her owners saw that their hope of gain was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace. See, when you look at another person as a hope of gain instead of an embodiment of glory, then you're lost. You lose the glory in yourself, and you lose the glory in them. We are not here to be a hope of gain for anyone. We are here to be an embodiment of glory. We are here to be an embodiment of truth and beauty and light. Don't leave this morning without looking in the stairwell gallery and seeing Brian Norman's beautiful paintings. And while you look at them, read the little plaque that goes with them. And pay careful attention to where it says, if you ask Brian to explain what it was about his art that expresses spirituality, his immediate response was, why beauty? Of course. Brian looked for and saw the beauty around him. Richard Rohr says, a Christian is a person who can see Christ everywhere. A Christian is a person who can see Christ everywhere. A Christian is a person who sees glory everywhere. A Christian is a person who sees beauty everywhere. A Christian is a person who sees love everywhere. That's our calling. That's the truth, the true nature of who we are and of our lives. And when we see that, we will know deep in our hearts that we are one with all the human community. We are one with all of creation, wherein dwells the glory and the beauty of God, as much as in any of us. We will know that it's all one great thing brought into existence by God, and we will live in tune with and in harmony with that beautiful reality.